And welcome to Cup of Joe. My name's Joe Albert, and welcome to this podcast today that I think is going to be extraordinary and being helpful and engaging. So thanks for joining us. I am joined by my talented co-host and partner here, Dr. Beck Burson. A lot of you know me. I've taught at Gonzaga University for about 25, almost 30 years now, and left Gonzaga a few years ago, and now reside down in Southern California, where I'm still teaching and doing some writing and some other work. But this podcast has been a real fun thing to do, especially with Beck. So, Beck, please introduce yourself.
Howdy. Yes, I'm Beck Burson, and I met Joe through the Organizational Leadership Program. I consider him a friend and a mentor. And flip about me, I love integrating neurons and narratives and trying to understand how people and organizations change for the better. And I love how this podcast allows for that to happen.
Great. Thank you. And today, Daniel Hendricks is our guest, and by the end of this, you'll be, I think, as impressed as we are with both his story, his talent, his resilience, and so many other things about him. A brief introduction of Daniel, and then I'll let him say a few words as well to introduce himself. But whether exciting audiences at New York's acclaimed Lincoln Center or thrilling critics at some of the major opera houses around the world, tenor and composer Daniel Hendrick has become a premier presence on the professional stage. He has received uncounted standing ovations in performing arts centers in a wide variety of locations: New York, New Orleans, San Francisco, Bonn, Istanbul, Tokyo, Seoul, Paris, Vancouver, Mexico City. His powerful voice has been described as rich, lyrical, soaring, powerful, and impressive. He's been lauded by the New York Times and a great many other artists as well. He has sung in major opera houses, but it didn't always come naturally for Daniel. Having lost his voice at age 22 at a Milan competition, he consulted with doctors upon returning to San Diego. And despite their frantic efforts to diagnose the problem, Daniel was left with an overwhelming talent and a frustrating inability to present it to the world. Support dwindled through his fans and friends and slowly disappeared. Increasingly discouraged, he contemplated other careers and turned in desperation to his faith. Daniel's been a strong man who knows anything is possible once you put your mind to it. And after 10 years of painful hard work, he brought his gift to New York City. And I'm going to let the rest of the story be from his own words. My first exposure to Daniel was just a couple years ago. My wife and I went to a small Mexican restaurant here in San Diego County. And there was a fellow at the restaurant behind a keyboard, and I thought, well, let's stay and see what he has. And I just expected some pop tunes and a struggling artist. And instead, what I heard was a world-class opera singer. I was just stunned by it. And my wife and I, we couldn't even eat our food. I think we were so in awe of him.
Sing once again with me, a strange duet. My power over you grows stronger yet. And though you turn from me to glance behind, the veil of the other is there inside.
and then getting to know him a bit from then on, I was excited that the idea of a segment on authenticity was some way I could pull him into this. And it's been a gift for Beck and I to get to know him a bit and also read his story. His book, Know You Know, which we'll talk a little bit more at the end, is a fabulous read. I just finished it. And in terms of storytelling, he does a wonderful job of capturing his own journey. So with that, Daniel, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's my honor and my blessing. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And, you know, to kick this off, I asked Daniel if he would maybe just choose a short selection from his book to read, and then Beck and I will take it from there. So, Daniel, if you don't mind, could I invite you to share something from your book?
Sure. Well, as you said, the story about me going to Milano for the competition. So I'll pick up there in the introduction of the book. It says, in my early 20s, I found myself on a runaway train headed for a crash, and crash I did, at the Caruso competition for young tenors in Milan, Italy. I lost my voice completely and left the stage devastated and humiliated. I frantically consulted with leading doctors and voice coaches throughout the U.S., all to no avail. My dream seemed to me an early demise. Friends dropped me like flies. Teachers, ministers, and coaches tried to convince me to forget about my childhood fantasy. I felt alone, abandoned, and at times I felt suicidal. I faced obstacle after obstacle. It would take years to find my own techniques, revive my voice, and get back on that stage. I had faith and trusted God even in my darkest moments. I knew my voice was a gift from God. When you know, you don't give up. When you know, time and space can be irrelevant. When you know, you just know, no matter what anyone else says or thinks. There are always signs to guide us on our paths. Much of the time, they're hidden in the shadows of life's experiences. Unraveling them is like a secret code the universe has prepared for us to decipher. Throughout my life, signs surrounded me. Many I missed and didn't understand until years later. They led me to the people who believed in me, like my good friend Dave McGugan, a very special human being who encouraged me to process my life's events in this book. My hope is that by reading this book, people will be better able to see the signs of life that are whispering to them, gently directing them on their life's path. Trust that you will know you are not alone and you are where you are meant to be.
Ooh, thank you. And for audience members, there it is. For audience members, I'd like you to reflect on your own best selves, that true expression of your core, real self, authentic self. And when has that run into obstacles, challenges, setbacks? And there's so much in Daniel's story that offers not just hope, but also, I think, methods of resilience that I found absolutely fascinating as I read it. Two of my influences in terms of authenticity, my students will remember this. Donald Winnicott, famous British psychoanalyst who writes, with games and only with games can the child or the adult create and use their whole personalities, and the individual only discovers his personality when he becomes a creator. And Daniel is a creator. He's expressive of a tremendous gift he has, but not easily something that sort of he could hold on to or count on always, especially when we lost it. And that's what's fascinating about this story, is that he lost that, the very thing that he felt like was most expressive of his true self. Another writer, Charles Taylor, philosopher, writes, being true to myself means being true to my own originality. And that is something only I can articulate and discover. In articulating it, I am also defining myself. I am realizing a potentiality that is properly my own. This is the background understanding to the modern notion of authenticity. And so Daniel has this incredible gift, and suddenly it disappears. How does one hold on to that and trust that it is still there and know that it is still there? Daniel, as you think about your own story and your own journey here, I'm trying to think of how to articulate this best, but what did you hold on to? How did you get through that real darkness?
Well, that's a really textured subject for me. It's not like a technique of practicing something. It's for myself, that's the title of the book, Know You Know. I was raised in a church from the time I was a little kid and always taught to trust God, believe in God, God will show you the way. But when I was 15 or 16, I heard this voice by the name of Mario Lanza sing. And in that moment of hearing this guy sing, I was literally had an outer body experience. And from that one moment, I had a knowingness that that's what I was supposed to do. That knowingness never left me. And it was so clear to me. It was almost in the place where I breathe. As I would take a breath, I could feel that consciousness of knowing that's what I am. I didn't have all the answers how it was going to work. And when I lost my voice, I had to scramble a lot to try to make some income for my family. But never, I can say, did I doubt that that's what I was and what I was, quote, called to do. So my minister came to me, tried to convince me to not keep singing, that it was a pipe dream. A rear admiral came to me, tried to convince me it was a pipe dream. Friends dropped like flies around me. They laughed at me. Newspapers wrote articles about how I destroyed my voice and I was so talented. But I had a knowingness. And I don't know how you can put that into a formulaic process for people, other than listening to the deepest part of yourself, what some people call that still small voice within, and practicing following that voice. And to be honest with you, I didn't even have to have a lot of self-talk, like, you're going to do this, you're going to make it, you're going to be okay. I just honestly had a knowingness that no matter what circumstances presented, I had no idea how long it would take, sooner or later, it would come back.
Wow. That's impressive. Beck, how does that land for you?
Yeah, that's really beautiful. And I think about the quote that we loosely bring up sometimes in these discussions about being seen, being known. I know we reference Oprah Winfrey, that everybody just wants to be seen and heard, and the John O'Donohue quote of, you know, one of the deepest longings of the human soul is to be seen. And this idea of seeing yourself, you know, getting to know yourself, getting to see yourself, and then locking into that clarity. And that can be really scary. And, you know, as your story shows, it can go against the grain. I know today we're talking about authenticity, and that term gets thrown around a lot, but it's hard to know exactly what people are talking about. I just want to throw out a definition that I like to use with my patients, and it's showing up in real time with all of our strengths and all of our vulnerabilities so that what's inside is aligned with what's outside. And I just wanted to know, A, if that definition feels true to you.
Mm-hmm.
B, if it does, tell me the story about how your authenticity emerged through this. When all these identifiers were taken away from you, what's that thing that red thread, that golden thread that continued into where you are now?
I would say the pushback against me seemed to define for me internally, with more and more clarity, what was happening. I felt so isolated. One, two, three people maybe on the planet believed in me, that somehow, miraculously, it was going to come back. But when people really started, from my perspective, attacking me, calling me crazy, saying that it was a fantasy, it wasn't real, there came something in the root of my soul, is the only way that I can describe it, that just said, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And then be strong in what you believe and what you know. So it wasn't that I was feeling at the deepest core of me anger towards them, even though in the moment, real time, I was angry. But after I let that moment pass, I'm like, they're just trying to do the best they can. I don't fault them for not being able to see it. The evidence doesn't give them any belief. Reason to believe it, but I had it. And I felt that I was demonstrating to my children that when you have it, don't let your environment dictate what you know to be your reality.
I mean, in a way, it almost clarified to you, mm-hmm. pushback, what was worth clinging on to. I mean, I don't want to minimize what an awful experience that was, but it was clarifying, mm-hmm. because it was a litmus test to ask you, is this worth clinging to or is this not? I mean, I was just talking to a good friend this morning, and I'm just going to pause for a second. Sean is vacuuming. They can edit that out.
Yeah,
I hear it.
I was just talking to a good friend this morning who is getting her dissertation, or getting her dissertation done for a doctorate, and she's looking at why people are willing to put their life on the line, whether they're, you know, EMS or military. And I think that that's a good way to frame authenticity, that it's something that you're willing to go to the mat for. Mm-hmm.
But, and also, if I could add, I think any kind of struggle, difficulty, it can sort of reveal what matters most to us, you know? And there's something, everything gets stripped away. I remember, you know, a year ago, as you guys know, I mean, I had heart failure, heart attack and everything, and I woke up in an ICU, and my arms are, you know, hands were tied to the rails, and I was intubated and stuff, and I couldn't talk. So anyway, I laid there thinking, well, what the hell, you know, like, what have I got to go forward with now? My wife had just died. And so, you know, what do you do next? And I laid there in the hospital in the ICU and just started to go through, what are the things I most want to accomplish? And it was raw. It was very stripped down. And it was like, okay, here's things I want to do. I mean, the no matter what. And Daniel, I'd like you to comment on this too. And because when I woke up in the hospital, my sons were on either side, you know, my two sons. And that was number one for me. It's worth it to survive this just because of them. And then also, what do I want to do? What's the agentive kind of, you know, goal for me moving forward? And so I think sometimes these struggles reveal our deepest probably motivations, and our sort of most aspirations kind of goals. So, and Daniel, your sons had a real significant role for you, I think.
Yeah, surely. So after all I went through, 8 years later, I made my debut at Lincoln Center. And then I'm singing all over the world for several years. And then came home from one of my gigs, and to make a long story short, my wife left for another person, and I'm there with my boys, not knowing what to do, because I had contracts to go and sing, but my friend, who was a psychologist at the time, came over to comfort me, and as I talked to the doc about my situation, it was clear that I couldn't just go back on the road and leave my sons. So I had to bow out. That was devastating to me as well. So here I lost the voice that I've got to, quote, be the international opera singer guy, singing with San Francisco Opera and Lincoln Center, et cetera. But there was a choice. Is this thing, this career that you work so hard for, more important than the mental and emotional health of your sons? I made the choice that my sons are more important. But at that time, that was like driving a knife into my career, because I wasn't super famous like Pavarotti or Plácido Domingo. I couldn't just pick up again a year later. It was like starting all over. So that was a very, very trying time and defined me again in another way. In the same way that I had a knowingness that I was called to be this international opera singer, I had a knowingness that my sons had to come first. I'm glad I get it.
One writer, and I love this notion, speaks about possible multiple selves that we have. And, you know, as a incredible, you know, vocalist, singer, tenor, and then also as a father, you know, and both are authentic expressions of who you are. In your book, you go into great detail about coaching the kids with baseball and helping them with this, helping with that, you know, and the breakup of you and your wife, you know, painful as that is for the boys. But, you know, there are all roles you've played, and they seem to me to have equal validity and equal sort of authentic sort of characteristics of who you are. And I don't know other selves that you may as well sort of manifest, but those two just struck me in the book. I don't know if you intended that or not, but that's the way it came across to me.
I did not intend it. I was just writing the story.
Yeah.
Telling my experiences. And the editor kept trying to make me aware of that kind of thing, you know, with intention, you know, weave all of these things together. But that was not my forte. I'm not a writer. I'm a songwriter, but not a writer. Thank God for Sylvia Mendoza, who edited the book, because she put that part together for me. But I think your characterization of the person that lost his voice and had a knowingness, and then the father that had a knowingness, and that same ingredient has surfaced over and over in my life. And I can just say, I think probably my parents were a big part of planting that seed within me and watering that seed throughout my young life.
Oh, that's a great description. And that is how it reads, by the way, is this wonderful shift that I think the reader feels the painfulness of leaving this incredible career and taking on a much less visible role, but equally important and more important, probably in your eyes, I think, you know, and as a dad, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely, because I went from being very seen to not seen.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
except by my children, but that was the most important part, to be seen by them.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Beck,
you're well, and what a creative act both of those facets of who you are represent. You know, that Winnicott quote about expression that Joe referenced at the beginning, it reminds me of Seth Godin talks about art, and his definition of art is doing something for the first time that's vulnerable, that makes a difference. And I imagine so many of your performances are that. I know when I was listening to, I think it was Tosca, I got chills and I just was like almost moved to tears. It was so beautiful. And I imagine when you are with your kids, it's the same core, right? And that creative expression, I feel like there's a vein there. Creativity, creating and authenticity. And how we create, it's very unique to us. And it touches on that nexus between identity and authenticity. And I just am so fascinated with the metaphor, but also your literal experience of losing your voice and finding your voice. And the voice being this biometric that is so unique to us that we can unlock our phones with it, or we can, you know, have high security access because it's so hard to replicate all the nuances. It's this expression and this creative expression. I would love to just hear either of your thoughts on the link between creative expression, creativity, and authenticity, and how that might play out in our lives.
Oh yeah, I'll say this and then turn it over to Daniel. But you know, Winnicott talks about the spontaneous gesture as the most the realest, truest expression of the real or the true self, you know? And so I often thought about that with kids. I mean, kids can be just spontaneous and uninhibited. And then as they grow along, especially with certain, you know, in terms of their environment, somehow they learn not to take risks like that. And I always feel like that's a bit of a loss, you know? And, but it is, that's what I love about like telling your own story. Nobody else can do that but you. It's one of the most creative expressions, especially as an adult, is I get to tell my own story. And that's what Daniel's book is. It's an expression of his own sense of himself, his own experience, you know, and that to me is what makes it so authentic, because it's genuine and true for him. So anyway, Daniel, go ahead.
Well, the childlike quality that you're referring to, I use that all the time with my singing students, and even with my speech therapy patients that I work with. And that is, we'll sing a particular line and they're having a problem with it, and I'll say, pretend you're 4 years old on the playground, just making fun of somebody. And it's almost like magic what happens. There's a release of something that happens in the consciousness of the person trying to do that. I could say easily I do that at least once a day with a student. So there's something about that memory when we're kids of freeing ourselves and not worrying about what anybody thinks. There is a freedom of creativity in that moment that frequently as adults, we get afraid of sharing. My dad used to always tell me, I'm just a 70-year-old kid or 60 or 80-year-old. And he meant it. He never stopped playing.
Yeah.
And play is a big part of creativity. And I think what you're talking about, authenticity, when you are creating something, and as I'm saying it right now, I can feel my scalp tingling. When that process happens, much of the time, it doesn't even feel like it's you. And in those moments, therein lies what some people call our highest self, our altered self, or the God within. There is something so profound that you start to be able to savor and taste what true authenticity is, separate from self, because it's happening to you. And I think there is something so powerful and transformational at so many levels of consciousness.
Oh, I like that.
We're both excited. Go ahead, Joe.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No.
All right.
They can edit this out.
What I love about that is that sense, it's pre-shame. It's like when kids can act authentically without being shamed into disguising it or hiding it in some way. Because I think shame is one of the most painful emotions to experience, especially when you are creative, and we all are to some degree in some way. But we experience a shame or embarrassment. You know, I remember singing once and somebody said, well, that just give me the microphone, Joe, just play the drums, please don't go near a mic again, you know? And it was like, yeah, you're right. I suck, you know? And it's shame then that you experience. And so I feel like what you do with, when you're coaching someone, Daniel, is freeing them of that burden of shame that they've experienced in a personal expression. And to me, what a wonderful gift to give someone, you know, is that. And I do think this, I'm very fascinated with emerging artists, especially young musicians that are just getting started, and watching the audience react to them. And if there's some inkling of resonance with the audience and they hear that back through applause or feedback, mm-hmm. it feeds that creative sort of engine within themselves and trust that this is real. And it's a real gift that they have. So I think what you're doing, and by the way, I also think your coaching is another manifestation of your authentic self. I think, you know, being a tenor, being a dad, but also a coach. I mean, there's something about that that seems so natural to who you are and what you do. And I think this stuff is sort of still emerging for you. So anyway, that's all I wanted to say. So.
There's a lot there, because everything you said, my thoughts were just popping like popcorn between both of you. And I think we could probably be on the same page that when there's a deeper truth, there is a paradox, mm-hmm. right? And when two things are true at the same time, we're really onto something. And this idea of authenticity being who we are, but also who we are without ego. Mm-hmm. There was an episode of This American Life back in, I think, August called Me Minus Me. And I think the byline was, when a fundamental part of yourself changes dramatically, are you still who you thought you were? Mm. And I mean, that seems to play off of Daniel's story so well in that motif, that authenticity is who we are without all the subterfuge, without all the shame, and how when we enter into this space, there is resonance. You know, when I said I listened to your music and it resonated, it gave me chills. I think that that's at this deep level that Joe's talking about, that when we can enter into that space where we're showing up in our strength, showing up in our weakness, so that what's on the inside aligns with what's on the outside. If you're doing that and I'm doing that, then there's this foundation for resonance that can happen. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about authenticity, resonance, and then this term that I know Joe's really into, intersubjectivity, where we're so intrinsically connected to each other that your story connects you to your students in ways that mm-hmm. impact them highly. You mm-hmm. know, we're all intrinsically connected when we can tap into that authenticity.
So are you asking me how that affects my relationship with my students, or?
Yeah, how do you feel like when you are more authentic, you get higher resonance? Or do you think that's
true? Oh, absolutely. We're using the term here, authentic. And in my experience, when I'm, quote, more authentic, I call that more connected to the divine.
Mm.
And when I'm in that place, cognition, as we know it, seems to take a back seat.
Hypofrontality.
Exactly that. Yes, I thought about that from when we spoke the other day. And there seems to be a different kind of consciousness where I find me more authentic, more connected to my artistic side, more, it's almost literally like I can feel energy just leaving my body and filling the room. And so when I'm talking to my students and I'm in that zone, which after doing it all these years is pretty easy to do it, I navigate through what they're telling me. I meet them where they are with what they're feeling. And I try to help them process that in similar ways that I did to connect to their authentic artist within, without shame, without fear. There is no note that you can sing wrong. We even do drills like this. If we're doing ba 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 ba, and they do ba 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 ba, I'm like, I don't want to see any look on your face of judgment for that. Not only do I want you to tame your face for not judging it, I want you to tame your heart for judging it. Just be like a video camera. Watch what you're doing without any sort of opinion and just stay in love and watch it. The process of healing and the process of learning is just dynamically faster. And it's organically rooted in such a place of consciousness that you don't forget it.
Yeah, it's a higher level of yourself. And maybe that answers a question that I want to ask you, but do you feel like in those moments you're becoming less of yourself or more of yourself?
I'm becoming less of Daniel and more of myself.
I love that answer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There are times, to be honest with you, I have problems even with my name. That bothers me, that guy. But that other guy, when I'm in that zone, that guy has no name. That's just, I am me.
Well, and I know our listeners are going to be part of a lot of different tapestries of spirituality or atheism or however you identify, that I even wonder, just using a definition, again, I use it with my patients for spirituality, which is the hard to measure part of ourself
mm-hmm.
interacts meaningfully
mm-hmm.
with something larger than ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And what I hear you saying is there's a lot of authenticity when you can take that hard to measure part of yourself that connects meaningfully with something beyond you that isn't driven by shame. It's not driven by fear.
Mm-hmm.
It's driven by creativity, this expression. What are your thoughts on that, Joe?
Oh boy, this is rich. And like, yeah. Back when you always stimulate, there's so much thinking I'm doing right now. When I you know what I go back to, honestly, I was sitting here thinking about this. My family came to visit from New Jersey, my niece and her husband and their two kids. And so I said, I got to take you to this Mexican restaurant. I want you to hear this guy singing and say, okay. So off we go. And, you know, and they're like, seriously, we're here, this Mexican. I said, no, it's going to be great. Trust me. And sure enough, this guy comes up and sets up his keyboard and starts playing, and I'm like, watch this, folks, you know. And eventually my niece Julianne, it was like I think 10 or 12 at the time, Daniel goes, come here, let's sing, you know. And the rest of her family were all comfortable singing, but Julianne was kind of nervous, and he just, and he held this space with her that was so safe is probably the best word, and encouraging. And she started singing A, B, C, D, you know, the song. And I was like, damn, and she's singing the thing, you know, and everybody that there's an inclusivity and like a wholeness about how he approaches people. And it's genuine. I mean, you go up there and suddenly the fear of and the shame is just not there. I just feel the sense of trust that he has my best self in his mind, you know, and is sort of honoring that in whatever way. He's not going to embarrass me or say, oh, you suck, you know, and there's going to be a real genuine holding mm-hmm. and creating space to allow this authentic self to find expression, even if they're not a world-class tenor. Just there's something about voice, you know, finding your voice that's metaphoric in some ways, but very genuine in others, that captures that expression. I don't know, Daniel, does that make sense? Does that fit for you?
You are dead on with your description of it. And for me, there's another word that we haven't used that's really the core of it all, and that's love. Mm. Just unconditional love. Love as brothers and sisters, which is what I view everybody as. That's how I was raised. Everybody's our brother and sister. And that's just an expression of wanting people to feel comfortable, having fun, creating a community. Those are all ingredients that I think society in general craves. To be able to be free to be expressive and know that you're not going to be judged. Crack, I don't care, but go for it. Go for it. And let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And usually it's pretty magical what happens.
Oh my God, it's incredible. Yeah, it really is. It really is. So, you know, and one other thing I just want to touch on too. How did you repair some of the relationships where there was a brokenness? You know, in your book, when people start shutting the door on you and so forth, do you look back with those with any resentment, you know, anger, hurt? I mean, is there anything, how do you repair those?
Well, Mario, who was my mentor, he was the right. one that kind of discovered me. He had a restaurant in Palm Springs and he sent me to USC. He was the one that after I lost my voice, he tried to help me and tried to fix it. And then when he saw that he couldn't fix my voice, he had his secretary call me and basically say, we don't need your services anymore. That was devastating to me because he was a mentor. I loved him deeply. But years later, when I made my debut, I just showed up at the restaurant. Didn't say a word to him. And he said, well, what's going on with you? Oh, I just made my debut at Lincoln Center. And his eyes about popped out of his head. And I sang, and we never said a word about it. And I always remembered, and this was my mom again, Jesus is going down the road of Calvary, cross on his head, carrying it. People are spitting at him and calling him names. And he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And that is more than just a verse in my head. It is, I know that verse. I know the meaning of that. And I talk about that equation in the book mm-hmm. With a conductor that was yelling at me all the time.
That's right.
And I think that's a powerful tool for any, and this is what I teach my students as well all the time. Forgive them. There's always those that are going to criticize. So don't waste your energy giving it to them of resenting them. Forgive them. They don't realize what they're doing. They don't have the consciousness to get it. They couldn't see the big picture. It's not their fault. It's okay. And so do I have a resentment? When I look within me, I can see that there's pain there. It hurt me. But I don't really see resentment towards them. I have forgiveness for them. I feel sad for them, actually, because I know from years later with him that that really haunted him.
Wow.
And what am I going to do? Go and put my finger on him and say, la, 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 I showed you? I mean, what does that benefit anyone, you know? But some do that kind of thing. my mother would slap me upside the head if I did something like that.
Yeah. At the other end of the spectrum, you have found love. And love. How has that been healing? Has that been, you know, just a whole new life? I mean, it's fun to read about, but I'm just curious how it is.
Oh, you mean love with Pilar?
Yes, yes.
Which we just did 22 years together.
Is that what it's
been? Oh my gosh, 22 years. Incredibly healing, because she really saved my life. Mm. Because that after I lost my career, lost my ex-wife, that just totally devastated me. I only really realized to what extent when I wrote the book. There were periods of the book where I couldn't write because I was just constantly crying. And that's when all this stuff came out, you know, and I realized, oh my goodness. But I was there with my kids and I didn't have time to mourn that equation. I had to find a way to survive with a bank account that was zero, because she took all the money and left from the jobs that I had just done. It was an extremely difficult equation. So the love that I was taught from the time I was a child grew and grew within me, and all of these terrible things that happened to me, instead of retreating into anger, it caused me to love deeper, because that's the only thing that was going to save my life.
Hmm. Wow. Thanks. Thank you.
Because I didn't want to live a life of hatred. I mean, obviously, you guys know that that's like one of the worst things you could possibly do to your consciousness and your heart. Love, forgiveness. Reframing the equation in a way that's going to support you and lift you up. Instead of existing in that equation and have it tear you down and make you feel like you're lesser than. So having been ridiculed literally so much is part of why now when I teach people is to say, don't even show the expression on your face of disappointment. And it's also like magic, because as they start to learn not to show it here, in time, they actually stop feeling that judgment. Mm. And when you can get someone to not feel judgment and they're cracking on a note, oh Lord, that's now your consciousness is open to really learn.
Wow. Wow.
The safety that's required for that.
Yep. Right?
That's something that Joe mentioned when his daughter was singing, you made her feel really safe. You know, your relationship with Pilar, you feel very safe.
Yes.
The growth you've done allows you to feel safe. And I just think about a lot of our listeners who are leaders and, you know, the absolute mandate that we have to create this safe space so that people can grow into their authentic version of who they are meant to be. And yeah, I can't help but think about like neurobiology of the negativity bias and how our brains are just engineered to notice the negative, and that trains each other to be critical, because we know that the brain responds to critique and shame and fear.
Yes.
It's a very quick way to learn, but how it's so counterproductive for authenticity. And mm-hmm. I just love hearing how love counteracts that. You know, that again, I think it is written, you know, love casteth out all fear, but I think fear casts out all love.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about when you know, the title of your book, to me, it reminds me of acceptance and commitment therapy, or ACT,
mm-hmm.
where you start to clarify and commit to the values that are most important to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it is like the signature, this barcode You know, your top three or four values might be different than my top three or four values, or maybe the inner face of one of them, but it's the signature we have. And we have to have the courage and the trust to commit to it. Mm-hmm. And when we do, it's so beautiful. It's resonant. Those are some themes that are really hitting me as far as authenticity, leadership. You've really pushed me to think about those things. I'm curious what you're taking with you, Joe, or what you're taking with you, Daniel, as far as pushing these thoughts forward. Is losing one's voice, finding one's voice, authenticity, creativity, resonance?
Yeah, a lot. And yeah, and we need to wrap up. And Daniel, what it's parting words from you about how to find out more about your work, your book, and you, sure. frankly.
Yeah, my website is danielhendrick.com, I-C-K. And the book, Know You Know, spelled K-N-O-W, is on Amazon. Just type in my name, Daniel Hendrick, Know You Know, and it'll take it right to the page.
Great. And you do appear, I get to hear you, so I'm a little bit selfishly sort of bragging here, but you do some appearances still.
Yeah, in San Diego, once a month, I appear at Chichotes in Cardiff by the Sea, and then Chichotes in Carlsbad, and then at Cocina del Rancho in Rancho Santa Fe. And here in Scottsdale, I sing at a place called Marcellino's and a place called the Italian Daughter.
Okay. So no Irish bars, I'm guessing. So, okay.
I wish there was one where he had a piano. I would love to find that environment. But
you'd be great. I think you would be great.
If you're out there, bar owner, call me.
There you go. There you go. What a gift you are. Beck, closing thoughts.
I just had to Google one of my favorite quotes from Marianne Williams and Nelson Mandela's inaugural speech. But at the very end, it says, "We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And yes. as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our fear, our presence automatically liberates others.
This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine." Saying that since I was a little boy. You are dead on with that message.
Yep. Thank you. What a great ending. We're running late, but I just, Daniel, just Beck and I just can't thank you enough for just your authenticity and your so many gifts you bring to people. I thank you for doing this. And
loved it.
Our next segment will be in February, and I'm kind of guessing we may run with authenticity for another session because there's so much here that's rich. And I would say from a leadership perspective, we haven't talked a lot about that, but I think this space that we're talking about that you create, Daniel, and that we all aspire to is a source of innovation and creativity in organizations. I mean, I think the safer people feel, the more willing they will be to be creative and the try things and for the benefit of the organization. So there's so many applications here. I won't go on, but I think there's tremendous value in what your book offers and in this whole subject area. So thank you. And thank you for listening. And we'll be back in February for our next segment. And we appreciate it. And please trust your authentic selves, and we will see you soon. Thanks.